Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, February 19th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
global trade takes center stage as the prospect of U.S. auto tariffs looms large.
Shares of HSBC tumble as geopolitics weigh on earnings.
Theresa May seeks fresh Brexit concessions from the EU.
And Wall Street awaits earnings from the world's largest big box retailer.
New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are joining a California-led lawsuit to block President Trump's national emergency for a border wall. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Bushka. Ahead in sports, a shakeup in college basketball's top five, but for how long? And OBJ trade rumors picking up steam.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Use an integrated investment account from Interactive Brokers to earn, borrow, spend, and invest globally from one account. Learn more at IBKR.com.
U.S. futures and stocks in Europe are heading lower this morning. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day at Bloomberg, and it's 6:01 on Wall Street. S&P futures are down 4 points, Dow futures down 30, Nasdaq futures down 6. The DAX in Germany has turned higher, up about 0.1% now. The CAC in Paris is down about 0.25%. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.66%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.50%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 51 cents to $56.10 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.8% or $10.30 to $13.3240 an ounce. The euro, $1.1310. The yen, 110.80. This update brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. Nathan.
Karen, global trade remains front and center as the European Union vows to retaliate if the U.S. imposes tariffs on cars. The news comes after the U.S. Commerce Department sent a report to President Trump detailing national security implications posed by auto imports. Bloomberg opinion columnist Chris Bryant.
Now, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know whether Trump will conclude that they are a threat, and if so, whether he'll impose tariffs. But it looks as though the Germans think that something is on the horizon, and they are, of course, worried about it.
U.S. auto tariffs would add to what is already a number of concerns for automakers. China is reporting yet another monthly slump in sales for January, while auto markets in the U.S. and Europe also started the year on a weak note.
When it comes to trade talks between the U.S. and China, President Trump is once again sounding optimistic.
Ambassador Lighthizer, I have to say, just got back from a place called China. And boy, oh boy, we're making a lot of progress. Nobody expected this was going to be happening.
And those trade talks continue this week in Washington with deputy-level meetings today and negotiations between high-level officials set for Thursday.
Now, on the Brexit front, Theresa May is coming under increasing pressure as time runs out to strike a deal. That has the UK Prime Minister sending representatives to Brussels in search of concessions from the EU. Bloomberg's Thomas Penny reports from London.
UK and European officials are working on a new legal text for the most contentious part of the Brexit deal, but time is running out for May to persuade a fracturing Parliament and divided government to unite behind her plan. 7 Labour MPs quit the main opposition party, shifting the political landscape and complicating her calculations over Brexit. In London, Thomas Penny, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Meanwhile, we're seeing further business fallout from uncertainty surrounding Brexit. Honda Motor is cutting its footprint in the UK, closing a factory that employs 3,500 workers. It's the biggest blow yet to Britain's auto industry, which has long been a Japanese hub for European auto production.
Now, at the same time, we have some strong economic data out of the UK. Employment in the country hit a record high in the fourth quarter, while wages grew at the fastest pace in more than a decade. Average earnings grew 3.4%, while the jobless rate held steady at 4%.
Turning to earnings now, shares of HSBC are down 4% after the bank's fourth quarter results. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Earnings fell short of estimates at Europe's largest bank. The market has really zeroed in on the revenue-cost ratio. With revenue down, the chief financial officer, Ewan Stevenson, tells Bloomberg they are not changing how they plan to invest.
We're in the middle of a very substantive investment program. We grew investment spend by 10% last year. We intend to grow it again this year.
The pressure's growing on HSBC to improve returns, but management stopped short of announcing a new buyback program, which some analysts called a notable disappointment. HSBC blames geopolitical uncertainty in China, the U.S., and the U.K., but negative interest rates also make for an extremely difficult environment in Europe. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, John. Shares of BHP Group are down about 1%. Earnings from the world's biggest miner missed estimates as weaker growth in China weighed on results. Bloomberg's Stuart Wallace has more.
Of the big hit that they took in copper, and it was a big hit, I think about 20% of it was coming from prices, and prices are directly linked to China. But there was a very clear physical problem as well, in that they had two mine outages that removed a lot of the volume. So not only were they producing less, but they were selling it at lower prices, and that's not a good combination.
Looking ahead, the recent price surge in iron ore is expected to boost full-year earnings for BHP. So far this year, iron ore is higher by nearly 30%.
Back here in the U.S., we get fourth-quarter results from Walmart today. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger has a preview.
Walmart is seen posting solid fourth-quarter results. Bloomberg Intelligence says the holiday season was a good one for the giant retailer, with improved operations and effective merchandising driving increased store traffic and online spending. Same-store sales gains are expected to exceed the company's full-year forecast of at least 3%. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thanks. And tomorrow we get minutes from the Federal Reserve's January meeting when policymakers took a dovish turn. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
The minutes will provide Wall Street with dynamics of the Fed's decision to delay further interest rate hikes. In recent speeches, Fed officials have signaled their intention to wait and see. Also on this week's economic calendar, data on factory orders for durable goods and existing home sales, two sectors of the economy that are showing evidence of moderation. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinnie, thank you. Finally, a well-known U.S. retailer calling it quits. Payless is filing for bankruptcy, saying it plans to close all 2,500 shoe stores in North America by the end of May. The company's retail operations outside of North America, however, are expected to continue business as usual. And futures this morning are moving lower. S&P futures down 4 points. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It is 6:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. California and 15 other states are taking legal action against President Trump's national emergency declaration. The lawsuit argues that the president does not have the power to redirect funds that Congress has appropriated for fighting drugs and cartels. California Attorney General Javier Becerra.
The worst of all ironies is that not only will the wall not help when it comes to stopping drugs from entering the country, but he's going to pull money from the real drug interdiction efforts to try to build this wall.
New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are also part of the lawsuit. President Trump has said that the case will wind up before the U.S. Supreme Court and that he will win the case. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein plans to leave the Justice Department in mid-March. That's according to multiple reports. Rosenstein appointed Robert Mueller to lead an investigation into whether President Trump's campaign conspired with Russia to interfere in the 2016 election. President Donald Trump has called on the Venezuelan military to drop its support of Nicolas Maduro. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
This at a rally in Florida and a broad attack on global socialism.
Socialism is dying, and liberty, prosperity, and democracy are being reborn.
Now, the plight of Venezuelans underscored by Florida Senator Rick Scott.
The average Venezuelan lost 24 pounds in 2017. That's socialism.
Trump said Maduro is not a Venezuelan patriot, but a Cuban puppet. He did call for a peaceful change. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump is considering at least four people to be his next U.N. ambassador. According to people familiar with the matter, they include the current ambassadors to Canada and Germany, Kelly Kraft and Richard Grenell, and Goldman Sachs partner Dina Powell. Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren will unveil a universal child care plan today aimed at limiting American families' expenses to 7% of income, regardless of how many children they have in care. A person familiar with the plan says Warren's plan would make child care free for a family of four who make under $51,500 a year. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Duke Blue Devils return to the top of the college basketball mountain for the third time this season. But Syracuse fans hope that that'll be short-lived. Just last month, the Orange took down Duke on the road in surefire number one overall, Zion Williamson. Syracuse coach Jim Boeheim isn't taking Zion nor the ACC lightly down the stretch.
He's a different player. It's hard to defend him. He's a physical specimen. He's like Charles Barkley was, except he shoots better than Charles did. In this league, though, these teams all can play.
First, Duke will battle UNC on Wednesday. Gonzaga is second, followed by Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee, who fell four spots after losing big in Lexington. The lone ranked team from the Empire State, Buffalo, number 24 in the coaches' poll, 25 in the AP. Three games in the top 25 on Monday. Third-ranked Virginia beat number 20, Va Tech, number 22, Wisconsin, and 23rd-ranked Kansas State, both winners. NFL news, talks are picking up between the 49ers and Giants for San Francisco to deal for star wideout Odell Beckham Jr. The Niners own the second and 36th picks overall. The combines are next week from Indy. On the ice, top two teams in the East both win. Tampa Bay now has 94 points on the year after a 5-1 win in Columbus. Boston beat San Jose 6-5 in overtime out west. The Bruins are in second place, 16 points back of the Lightning. Both clubs have won six straight. And spring training update, Dellin Betances reported for the Yankees on Monday after the birth of his son. He's ready to talk contract extension. While shortstop Didi Gregorius is recovering from Tommy John surgery, he fielded ground balls and played catch. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
All right, thank you, Rob. And Serena Williams has returned to the top 10 in the tennis rankings for the first time since she took a break to have her first child. Williams had fallen as low as 491st on her return to competition in March of last year. Since then, she's reached two Grand Slam finals, including a loss to Naomi Osaka, the current world number one at the U.S. Open. S&P futures down 4.5 points. Dow futures down 35 now. NASDAQ futures down 8. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. That's coming up on 6:12 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties. For investor partners, see them at NRIA.net.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is 6:17 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check of the latest headlines with Erin Roman at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning, Karen. Trade tensions between the U.S. and EU are coming to a head, with European officials threatening to retaliate against any tariffs on car imports. The Commerce Department has given President Trump its report on whether imported vehicles pose a national security risk. Meanwhile, talks between the U.S. and China resumed today in Washington. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, and Chinese Vice Premier Liu He joined negotiations Thursday. Huawei is defiant. The company's founder tells the BBC, quote, "There's no way the U.S. can crush us." He says the arrest of his daughter is politically motivated, but he'll leave it to the courts to settle the issue. And 16 states are suing to block President Trump from diverting federal funds to pay for a border wall. They said his declaration of a national emergency violates the Constitution's separation of powers clause. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen?
All right, Erin, thank you. S&P futures lower down 7.5 points. Dow futures down 70. NASDAQ futures down 17. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 2.66%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.50%. NYMEX crude oil up 1% or 55 cents to $56.14 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.8% or $10.40 to $13.32.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.1296. The yen, 110.81. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, according to multiple reports, Deputy Attorney General Ron Rosenstein will leave his position next month. The news comes after former acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe claimed that he and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein had discussed whether President Trump was fit to serve and should be removed from office. President Trump is demanding Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro step down Warning time is running out for the dictator. The president addressed a crowd of Venezuelan expats at Florida International University in Miami. In the NHL, the Bruins won in overtime against the Sharks, 6-5. The Capitals won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Intelligence. Valuable industry data and analysis from independent experts, giving trading and investment professionals insight into where crucial industries stand today and where they may be heading next.
And it's 6:20 on Wall Street. Good morning, I'm John Tucker, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Europe's largest bank, HSBC, out with fourth quarter earnings. Earnings missed estimates, and their outlook, it's crummy. Jonathan Tice of Bloomberg Intelligence is our senior European bank analyst, and he joins us now from London. Jonathan, good morning to you. Thanks for being with us. I can get into the weeds with some of these banks, but at some level, it's almost a bit of unintended obfuscation of the environment there. How the heck can a bank make money with interest rates that are negative? I realize HSBC is kind of immune to some of the rates there on that front.
Good morning. Certainly, HSBC, two things. One, it's got a big Asian franchise, and clearly, emerging markets, you have higher ROEs. When the cycle turns, you have worse credit losses, but it's a better place with higher ROEs for a lot of the cycle. Also, they've got a lot of excess liquidity, i.e. more deposits than they've lent out, which they can reinvest at a higher yield. So to an extent, they were sidestepping some of the margin issues, and their margin's been rising when the rest of Europe continues to struggle. That said, they missed for the margin this quarter, and the problem, the reason the shares are down 4%, is that I think consensus revenue's got a little bit ahead of itself now.
Okay, net interest margin, I think, was about 1.6%, something like that, in Q4 for them.
Yes.
What's the outlook going forward at this point? That's going to continue to slip, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, when you bear in mind that the sector as a whole in Europe, I mean, we've got no growth. These guys are looking at 4 to 5% loan growth. With margin slipping, at best, you're talking now probably 5% revenue growth. But it's a well-capitalized bank. The other issue they've got is that they used to be a restructuring story. I mean, they sold tens and tens of different businesses, and then they became a growth story. And somewhere in that, they decided that what we'll give you is a target called operating jaws, i.e., we will tell you how much more we will grow revenues.
Let me just back up. I need to explain jaws because I think it was absent that day in business school. But you have revenue; it's got to outpace the costs. So that's
revenue growth has to outpace cost growth. Yes,
that's what they call positive jaws, I guess.
Exactly. And the problem we've got here is that they've also got a massive investment program. They've said they're going to spend 17 to 18 billion over 4 years on growth and IT. And only one quarter of the last four have they delivered positive jaws. And they missed at year end because December was such a horrible month for trading. So the market once again sort of saying, why are you giving us this target when you don't appear to be able to stick to it?
Why don't they just cut costs more?
I think in their case, they're right to invest, but like a lot of banks, if you give a ratio and part of the ratio is predicated on revenue, you've got a problem when your revenue is going the wrong way, which it will in this environment. So what we should have instead is a hard cost target, like a Barclays does, rather than a cost income ratio that, for example, the French banks do, and they've all had to step back from.
Well, there's too much cost in the system is the bottom line.
Absolutely. But bear in mind, if you're a retail bank, particularly across Asia, you can take costs out in the future, but you do have to build out your franchise.
I'm not getting a good sense of how they intend to grow.
4 to 5% loan growth. I mean, you've got 10% loan growth in China. China's still growing at 10%. Hong Kong, you've still got 10% growth. Singapore, you've still got growth. They are taking enormous strides, taking market share in the UK. So I buy the 4 to 5% loan growth, which is an awful lot more than anywhere else. I mean, in the UK, Lloyds, for example, it's flat at best, loans. The issue we've now got is that the margin might be going backwards, which clearly erodes top-line growth, even if you've got 5% loan growth.
So what's the future of the system? I got like 30 seconds if you could do it in that.
I think the future of the system is we do have to focus on costs, and the problem we've got coming is credit costs are going to rise. Bad debt is going to rise. We know that. So there are no easy fixes for revenue, more on costs, and that's why the share prices are trading where they are.
Real quick, are you surprised it didn't fall further today?
Not really, because it hasn't done an awful lot over 12 months. And bear in mind, it is delivering on most of what it said. And this thing's still generating billions and billions in cash flow.
Okay, John, always good to talk to you. Jonathan Tice from Bloomberg Intelligence, providing unique real-time research and context on industries and all the market and government factors that impact business and terminal customers. You can access this function at BIGO. Again, shares are down about 4%. This is Bloomberg.
All right, John, thank you. 6:25 on Wall Street and Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit a Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are lower following the long holiday weekend as investors await fresh headlines on the outlook for global trade.
Well, another round of U.S.-China trade talks does get underway in Washington this week, including high-level negotiations on Thursday. We get more from Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie.
A team led by U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer will sit down with China's Vice Premier Liu He on February 21st. The latest round of talks come amid cautious optimism the two sides could be getting closer to some kind of deal. Both sides said they're looking to sign a memorandum of understanding. That could form the basis of a deal hammered out by the two presidents, possibly as early as mid-March. In Beijing, Tom McKenzie, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Tom, thank you. The European Union is warning that it will retaliate if the U.S. follows through on a threat to impose tariffs on imported vehicles. President Trump has received a Commerce Department report on the national security implications posed by auto imports.
On the Brexit front, negotiators are working on a new legal text for the most controversial part of the deal, the Irish backstop. At the same time, there are rumors of defections from the U.K.'s two major parties after seven MPs split from the Labour Party.
Honda Motor says it plans to close its factory in the UK. It's the biggest blow yet to a British auto industry already buckling under thousands of job cuts in the run-up to Brexit.
On the earnings front, shares of HSBC are falling after fourth quarter results missed estimates. The bank warns geopolitical uncertainty in China, the US, and the UK has made its forecast for the year far less predictable. Here's Chief Financial Officer Ewan Stevenson.
We'll continue to be cautious until we see how the revenue environment plays out this year. And it is a particularly volatile revenue outlook as we look at the year.
The results have shares of HSBC down 4% this morning.
Shares of BHP Group are down 1%, earnings from the world's biggest miner missing estimates.
And here in the U.S., Walmart leads 16 companies in the S&P 500 reporting earnings today.
Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are lower, down 9 points. Dow futures down 85. NASDAQ futures down 20. The DAX in Germany is down 0.3%. CAC in Paris down 0.5%. FTSE 100 down 0.7%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 2.66%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.50%. NYMEX crude oil up 1%, up 55 cents to $56.14 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.7% or $9.60 to $13.31.70 an ounce. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr has more of what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much. And we have breaking news. It looks like Bernie Sanders is giving it another try. The Vermont senator is launching his second campaign for the White House. Sanders told Vermont Public Radio in an interview airing later this morning that we began the political revolution in the 2016 campaign, and now it's time to move that revolution forward. California's attorney general has filed a lawsuit against President Donald Trump's emergency declaration to fund a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. Javier Becerra says 16 states, including California, allege the Trump administration's action violates the Constitution.
It's clear that Donald Trump himself doesn't believe that there's a crisis and a need for a national emergency declaration. But even if there is, that doesn't mean that he gets to violate the Constitution, the separation of powers in the Constitution, and start to raid monies that have been allocated appropriately by Congress.
President Trump reaffirmed his support for the opposition movement in Venezuela. The president spoke at a rally in Miami, Florida, home of tens of thousands of Venezuelan expatriates.
The twilight hour of socialism has arrived in our hemisphere, and frankly, in many, many places around the world.
President Trump says the Western Hemisphere will become the first free hemisphere in all of human history, predicting the fall of socialist regimes in Cuba and Nicaragua. President Trump is considering four people to be his next UN ambassador. According to people familiar with the matter, they include Goldman Sachs Group partner Dina Powell, the current ambassadors to Canada and Germany, Kelly Kraft and Richard Grenell, and John James, a former Republican U.S. Senate candidate from Michigan. President Trump says the U.S. needs to bring American citizens who join ISIS back home to face justice and is calling on other countries to do the same. One U.S. citizen now in a Syrian refugee camp is Hoda Mathena, who left Alabama to marry an ISIS fighter 4 years ago when she was 19. Mathena told The Guardian she wants to come home and turn herself in.
I realized I made a big mistake, and I know I ruined my future and my son's future, and I'm deeply, deeply regretting.
Mathena married three times during her time in Syria, each time to an ISIS fighter, each time made a widow. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. A familiar spot atop the college basketball rankings for the Duke Blue Devils. They jump back to first for the third time this season. The preseason favorites led by probable number one overall pick Zion Williamson. But their last loss was a month ago to Syracuse at Cameron Indoor. Coach K on the challenges of playing Syracuse this time around on the road.
Our kids fought like crazy and put themselves against a very veteran team. One of the most veteran in the country and well coached, and we put ourselves in a position to win, and we weren't able to do it.
The Blue Devils must first visit 8th-ranked North Carolina on Wednesday before the Saturday game at the Carrier Dome. College action from Monday, 3rd-ranked Virginia beat number 20, Va Tech, while number 22, Wisconsin, and 23rd-ranked Kansas State, both victorious. In the NFL, the Giants are receiving heavy interest from the 49ers to trade for wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. San Francisco owns the 2nd and 36th pick in the draft. If the Giants are looking for the number 2 overall, it may cost them a mid-level pick as well, according to experts. NHL, the top two teams in the East, showed us why, winning their sixth straight, both on the road. Tampa Bay clobbered Columbus 5-1, while the Bruins won in overtime, 6-5 in San Jose. Alex Ovechkin scored a pair. He now has 42 to lead the NHL as the Capitals beat the Kings in Los Angeles. In Grapefruit League, a double dose of good news for Yankees fans. Didi Gregorius took ground balls, played catch today, coming off Tommy John surgery. And pitcher Dellin Betances joined the club after the birth of his son, ready to work on a new deal. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Okay, Rob, thank you. It is 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
President Trump may not have much to say about artificial intelligence on his Twitter feed, but credit where it's due. His administration has come up with a smart plan to ensure the U.S. keeps up in an increasingly crucial industry. AI holds immense promise. It's likely to boost productivity, stimulate demand, encourage innovation, vastly improve consumer products, eliminate waste, and much more. Yet America's traditional lead in this field shows signs of slipping. Trump's American AI initiative is a measured response. It directs federal agencies to invest more in R&D, share data and computer models with outside researchers, establish technical standards, boost workforce development, and otherwise prioritize the technology. The plan's very modesty is an advantage. It recognizes that the private sector must take the lead. On this issue, the White House has shown an uncharacteristic blend of forethought and restraint. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion editorial board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. It is 6:38 on Wall Street. And in later on this week, we're going to get remarks from several Federal Reserve officials. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the details.
In addition to the Fed Minutes Wednesday, we'll be hearing from a number of Federal Reserve officials this week. Today, Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester will be the keynote speaker at an economic forecast event hosted by the University of Delaware. Thursday, Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic discusses the economic outlook and monetary policy at an event in Atlanta. And then Friday, New York Fed President John Williams joins colleagues Jim Bullard, Mary Daly, and Patrick Harker at the Booth School of Business Monetary Policy Forum. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. 6:39 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
People will die as a result of President Donald Trump's actions or inactions on climate change. That was the grim warning from former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry at an international security conference in Germany. And he says he's determined to make it a voting issue. Kerry made an impassioned speech at a discussion on climate change at the Munich Security Conference. He blamed Trump for causing serious trouble in the future.
I wish there was a way to hold the President of the United States accountable for the loss of life that is going to take place every day, for the displacement of people, for the trillions of dollars we will have to wind up spending because we're not getting the job done.
Kerry appeared a few hours after Vice President Mike Pence addressed the security forum. The former Secretary of State labeled the current U.S. administration's climate change indifference shameful, condemning Pence's failure to even mention the phrase climate change at a conference highlighting challenges to global security. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
All right, Bob, thank you. Futures on Wall Street in the red at the moment. S&P futures down 9 points. Dow futures down 92. NASDAQ futures down 23 points. 10-year Treasury yield 2.66%. 2-year is at 2.49%. This is Daybreak. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Virgin Atlantic. Over 300 hours of onboard entertainment, flatbeds for napping, and afternoon tea. Daily nonstop flights to the UK in partnership with Delta Airlines.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures this morning are moving lower. We go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Karen. Like you said, U.S. futures are under pressure right now, with Dow futures down 94 points. S&P's dropped 10 and NASDAQ futures declined by 21. The U.S. 10-year yield at 2.66%. Shanghai was little changed overnight. Well, European markets are also under pressure, led by losses in Italy. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 10 o'clock, the NHB Housing Market Index. And regarding earnings this morning, Medtronic beat estimates and look for Walmart to report around 7 a.m. In other news, Stevens says that McDonald's core U.S. business is accelerating. And in the energy space, Targa Resources to sell 45% of its Bakken assets for $1.6 billion. Wrapping things up, Deere was downgraded to hold over at DZ Bank. Weight Watchers downgraded to underweight at J.P. Morgan. XPO Logistics cut to equate at Morgan Stanley. And Lululemon downgraded to neutral over at Nomura Instinet. Live from the First Word Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Bernie is back. Bernie Sanders, the independent Vermont senator who finished runner-up to Hillary Clinton for the 2016 Democratic presidential nomination, announced today a second White House bid. A lawsuit has now been filed against President Trump for his emergency declaration to fund a border wall. 16 states filed their lawsuit last night, led by California. In the NHL, the Bruins won in overtime against the Sharks, 6-5. The Capitals won. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg Terminal, working the buzzsaw at night, snore.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, not woodworking, but a nasal probe called the Viveur can clear blocked airways and stop snoring. That's according to the Daily Mail. The device, approved by the FDA, heats up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ow.
And, yeah, and yeah, it'll stop a lot. is pressed against swollen or inflamed tissue to shrink it and clear the blockage. But sadly, it is no help for the millions with sleep apnea.
Still, you've saved a lot of marriages here, Michael, with news that maybe we have a new way to alleviate snoring.
Yes,
it's very nice.
My wife uses a pillow. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
I still deny that I snore. Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's nearly 6:50 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories include trade talks resuming this week between the U.S. and China, California leading 16 states in a lawsuit against the president's national emergency declaration at the border, and, of course, the breaking news you just heard from Michael moments ago, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has just announced that he will make a second run for president in 2020. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter joins me now. Tell us more about this announcement, Kate.
So this is the one that people, one of the ones that people have really been waiting for on the Democratic side. There's been a lot of speculation, will he or won't he, and it looks like he's going to. Sanders, you know, very famously in 2016 sort of upended the Democratic field and really launched kind of a re-energization of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party when he ran his campaign against Hillary Clinton. So I think that there's a sense that he... his profile is similar to some other folks that are already in the race, namely Elizabeth Warren. But I think that he's viewed as having in some ways some potential advantages given, you know, his history and how well he did, surprisingly, in 2016.
Yeah, you mentioned 2016. Like you say, the makeup of the expanding field of Democrats running for president this time around is quite a lot different from it was in from what it was in 2016, when throughout that race, Hillary Clinton was seen as the front runner basically throughout.
Absolutely. And so I think with this this race, you know, obviously it's different because it was the end of a Democratic president's term in 2016. So it's not that uncommon to, you know, switch parties. The only time in recent memory that we had, you know, three terms in a row of a same party president was in 1988 when George H.W. Bush beat Michael Dukakis. So I think there was a sense that at that time, it wasn't that surprising that, you know, well, in some ways, it's not surprising that a Republican beat a Democrat, but it was a wide open field on both sides. And this time around, you know, it's more focused on the Democratic side because Trump is obviously seeking re-election.
Yeah. So how does this change the calculus, if at all, for anybody else who might be thinking of running? I'm thinking, for example, Joe Biden, who's considering throwing his hat in, Beto O'Rourke, people like that.
Well, I think it might have more influence on the thinking of someone like Beto O'Rourke, who hails from the more progressive wing of the party, versus someone like Joe Biden, who in some ways doesn't share the same sort of profile of Sanders. You know, I guess they are similar in the sense that they're both, you know, have been around Washington quite a while, and so they are seen as, you know, kind of familiar names and faces, but they don't have similar sort of policy prescriptions. But this could be a deterrent potentially for other progressive candidates that are thinking of hopping in the ring. They may determine that they're going to sit it out this time and wait for another chance, you know, perhaps 4 years from now.
You know, it's interesting to note that this announcement from Senator Sanders comes less than 24 hours after President Trump gave a speech in Miami against the Maduro regime in Venezuela and in a broader context against socialism generally. Of course, Senator Sanders has called himself a democratic socialist throughout his career.
He has. And I think that part of what we're seeing here, we saw kind of Trump flick at this during his State of the Union address a couple weeks ago, is the beginnings of kind of Trump's narrative for 2020, which is, I think, that he's likely to cast the Democratic Party as being the party of socialism. That's not a new argument in Washington. It's certainly one that Republicans put forth during the Obama era. And I think we're likely to see that happen again. I think that, you know, it in some ways also is interesting in that Trump, you know, has been very, very strong against Maduro. And so in some ways, this shows that he might have some domestic political motivations for that as well.
Yeah. Does this point to where the campaign, the overall theme of the campaign, what it could be going forward, an ideological battle between socialism and capitalism?
Well, I certainly think that's what the Trump campaign would like to, that's the battleground on which they'd like to compete. They would certainly like the campaign to be defined in those terms. I think Democrats will push back hard against that. But, you know, when we see folks like Elizabeth Warren coming out with proposals for universal child care. That's certainly something that, whatever you think of the policy merits of it, is going to be the type of thing that Trump, I think, I would expect Trump to cast as being sort of new age democratic socialism.
Does this provide an opening at all, do you think, for someone to come in from the center to try to shake up this race?
It does potentially. I think there's, not a clear front runner in, there's various wings of the Democratic Party, and none of them have a clear front runner at this point. I think that the risk that Democrats face, though, is that they end up in a 2016 type situation where they have a more establishment party candidate facing off long into the primary process against a more progressive candidate. And that really, will have the effect of highlighting the schism within the Democratic Party. And perhaps, really there's no scenario in which that doesn't make it easier for Trump to win a second term.
And in our last 30 seconds here, with Senator Sanders entering the race now, are you foreseeing a pretty long slog for the Democratic primary process? I mean, we are still nearly a year out from the Iowa caucuses.
Absolutely. And I would expect the next year to be full of, a lot of sort of intra-party soul searching and intra-party sniping. And, I think the real question, though, is once the voting begins in Iowa, about a year from now, a little under a year from now, whether Democrats will be able to quickly coalesce around a front runner or whether this becomes a very protracted process, as it has been in the last two campaigns, or the last, in 2008, I guess, and then again in 2016. If this becomes a very protracted inter-party fight, I think that could, spell danger for Democrats in terms of the general election.
Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thanks as always. Read more of these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal, and follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington at Bloomberg 99.1. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. 6:56 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, Karen. Todd Miller transformed his small business a year ago, shifting Classic Metal Roofing Systems of Kentuckiana from a company with employees to one using independent contractors. Now, he says the change gives more flexibility in doing roof replacements than he had with a small group of full-time employees. It has been lost on small business owners that Uber and other ride-sharing services are enormously successful without having employees doing the work. It's one of the reasons why small companies are foregoing employees in favor of independent contractors. In a tight labor market, owners can more easily find independents rather than full-time employees. Owners can also save on overhead, hiring only when they need help. They don't have costs like employment taxes and insurance, nor do they face the administrative and management tasks that go along with having full-time employees. And that, Karen, is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report.
All right, John, thank you. And futures are lower this morning. S&P futures down 8 points, Dow futures down 80, and NASDAQ futures down 18. The 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 2.66%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.50%. And Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.